Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror, Wine, and Crime. What's going on, Lo?
Oh, girl.
My
head be spinning. I'd be getting thoughts.
One of those days?
Weeks? Yeah.
Months?
Girl. These wine glasses aren't big enough this week, okay?
Right, you got to get one of those jumbo ones.
No, so you're familiar with my boss. You've met him a few times in your life, right?
Occasionally, here and there, you know, just the last, 20.
Six family 20, reunions.
Yeah, 20-something years.
Well, we was making some jokes and talking, and so I'm going to call it right here in front of me, you, and all our creepies, because I feel like our creepies are important, and I like to share my thoughts, and I want them involved. So
in the loop.
I do. So I don't know if you heard, but Diddy's in some trouble.
You don't say.
Yeah. So his homeboy, R. Kelly, be reaching out saying, "Twin, I got you a cot. Like, we're going to do this." Okay.
He's waiting for him.
It's an orange party instead of a white party, okay? It's Bad Boy Lifers. That's the new record label coming out, right? So I figured once they get what they need to convict Diddy, if it's true, once he goes away, if he goes away this year, you know, I know some stuff drags out. But let's just say he gets convicted and arrested this year, right? They get him. 2025, maybe 2026, if it goes to plan. Pac comes back, baby. The comeback tour. You see Pac and Biggie coming back, holding hands, being like, "What up? All right, Bad Bunny, you sit your ass down. You sit your ass down. Y'all had a chance to keep rap alive, and y'all done fucked it up, okay? Like, we had to come back and clean up your mess. Like, uh-uh." Pac's on his plane from Brazil, and he's like, "Yo, Missy, I'm on my way." Missy hangs up the phone, speed dials, conference call. Ashanti, Maya, get Ja Rule. We're doing this. All of a sudden, we get our players back, okay? We get our people back. It's going to be a comeback. 2025, 2026, our people are coming back. And all those little wannabe rappers. Half of them, I don't even know who they are, okay? They got, like, one song and a crazy-ass name, and I only know it because my daughter spins it on TikTok all day. Yeah. Walking in
her
room.
You guys heard it here first.
Walk past her room, and she's all in there, like, "Let your coochie breathe." Like, what? Hands on your knees. I'm like, oh, girl.
Such deep lyrics nowadays.
Whatever happened to just get your freak on?
Just keeping it simple, you know?
So I just wanted to share that with you. That's my
thing. Lo said it.
That's my thing. 2025-26, Pac returns. Now, I'm not 100% sold on the Biggie. I heard some theories as well, you know, that they were really boys and people were just pinning them against each other. They didn't even really have beef. It was just Pac's people and Biggie's people trying to make shit bigger than what it was, and they just got mixed up in the shuffle, right?
I could see that.
They had to get out because it was just getting too crazy.
They're just chilling on an island somewhere together waiting for Diddy to go down.
Yep. They're waiting. So
that would be very iconic, so I really hope that that's the case.
Oh my God.
I hope your prediction is right.
America would lose their shit, okay?
It would be the biggest news, I feel like, ever.
My mom would be like, "Oh my God, she's been saying that since she was 17 years old, okay?" Like,
you'd be like, "My dreams are coming true."
I was like, boom, mic drop, mom. I told you.
You can come on here and be like, I said it here, guys. We have the recording. Play it back.
Crystal was a little bit like, "I don't know, maybe." But then I threw some stuff, like, you know, the background. Suge shot me. Machiavelli spelled backwards. I'm alive. I mean, I'm just saying. Just a little thing.
She threw some stuff at me and I was definitely swayed more in her direction. I was like, okay, all right.
You gotta pay attention.
You got me leaning in. You got me listening.
In other news, on Lowe's Hollywood Lowdown.
Dun.
We still don't have the I don't even know what that was.
That was very cartoonish, but I like it.
I felt like it was like one of the cartoons running really fast.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get Shara's keyboard. We're gonna come up with some jingles. Lowe's Hollywood Lowdown. We are continuing with the Christine Quinn. He said, she said bullshit. Okay.
Drama.
So we talked about last week. If you weren't here, you can go back and listen, or you can just look at any gossip column and it's probably on there. Christine Quinn is from Selling Sunset. She was kind of a drama queen, quite bitchy, just mean girl on the show. They parted ways. She got married, had a baby, and last week it made the headlines that there was a domestic dispute. She claims that, you know, he threw dog feces at her and bottles that were in a bag he threw, shattering on the wall, knocking it into their son, putting glass all over their son. Just very some crazy things. He fought back saying, she's the crazy one. She doesn't clean up after her dogs. They piss and shit all over the place. She's just very nasty, eats food in the bed, doesn't clean it up. Just a bunch of, basically a bunch of shit thrown at each other. So on
literally.
ding, ding, ding. So Christine Quinn was granted a temporary restraining order against her estranged husband, and which he was arrested twice in March. He violated orders
like that he had.
Yeah, I guess like a bond or, you know, whatever you call it. And I guess you could call it even maybe a temporary restraining order of such. So Wednesday, April 3rd in LA, a judge signed off on Quinn's restraining order saying that he is required to leave their LA home and he has to stay at least 100 yards away from her. It's temporarily, but the order also states that Richard is not allowed to interact with the couple's 2-year-old son. Christian also has 2 dogs with her husband, Bubby and Teddy. He is permitted to have some contact with Quinn in order to conversate about child visitation. But again, the restraining order is in effect until April 17th. Among other claims against her estranged husband, she accused Richard of faking a suicide. In September 2023, she said, he said he wanted to see if I cared about him. She said that she wrote in the restraining order that she filed that he became very angry with her and started questioning why I need to work, asserting that he was providing everything. That night in their hotel room, he poured a handful of pills and shoved them to his mouth, pills flying out of his hand, spilling on the floor, telling me he was dying. She continued like, whatever. And then what felt like an hour, apparently he was falling in and out of consciousness. It had her being very terrified for him. And then suddenly he appeared sober and said, "You passed the test. You really do love me."
If that's true. What a psycho.
Yeah. She said that she felt very controlled by their whole relationship. She feels unsafe. She said it has been toxic for several months. She's been in a lot of distress. It's going to be a long, messy road ahead of them, but they both have restraining orders as of now, and they are not in agreement on plans about their son. Attorney and legal expert Nima Ranami, sorry if I messed up your name. I don't do last names, you know me. Sometimes not even first. that Richard will or could be likely charged with a felony charge, even if Quinn chooses not to press charges. So, yeah, it looks like it's going to be some ongoing drama here for a while. It's all going to depend on what his lawyers are able to negotiate based on the facts, the cases, as well as a criminal history. And frankly, what the deputy district attorney who's assigned to the case has to say. So we will see what happens. We'll keep following the story and we'll tell it to you as we get it to us.
And by it's very dramatic.
Yeah.
All the details are like, their relationship stresses me out and I'm not even in it.
Yeah. So, how about if you get married, let's not be violent with each other and then you can avoid all this.
Yeah, that should really just be the number one rule. And like, clean up your dog's shit and like don't throw it at each other and like don't like fake suicides just to like test each other. It's just all very bizarre and toxic.
Very War of the Roses.
Very.
So, unless you have any fun little facts, thoughts, comments, anything in the headlines that made you go,
Not really. I mean, I know we talked about JoJo Siwa a few months back. She released a new video and it's causing some hate for her online. People are kind of coming at her.
Is it
kind of making fun of her?
Is this a newer one?
Yeah, I think it just came out. People are making fun of her dancing. They're also saying that she's just like changing a lot and becoming way too extra and like pushing her like sexuality on people and stuff. So a lot of people were coming for her after she released that.
Yeah, I think she's just rich, spoiled, and bored.
I think so too.
And clearly no guidance on how to act.
Mm-mm. No, I think that the adults that she's been surrounded with kind of just hype her up and don't really bring her back down to earth.
Yeah, because she's that money, money, money.
Mm-hmm. She's got big time money. That's right.
But I feel like people like her, it's not going to last forever. Like, I don't see her becoming a pink.
No, me neither.
I don't see her.
Like that many people don't like her. Like, no offense.
She was good with, you know, the little kids.
Yes.
But even now, little kids these days, I don't think are even really listening to her.
No, like she for sure had big fan groups with like the bows and the pink.
Yeah, but they all grew up and they're not doing bows no more.
Yeah, she's changed. She's not doing that. They're not doing that. So it's like, who's really her like fan base now? I don't really know. So yeah, I don't see it lasting.
I mean, she might have her TikTok followers.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just noticed in the camera my hair was like, what is going on? Okay.
Girl, that's me every week.
Yeah, she's just fucking annoying.
She is. So that's really the only thing that I've seen that I can think of at the moment. But yeah, I saw that and I saw she was getting a lot of heat for it.
I did watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the TV series.
Oh, how was it?
It was pretty good. If you have some time, it's on Prime.
Okay.
Or Hulu. You should give it a whirl. I think it's only like 8 episodes. It's not very long.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know who the... I'm not sure who the Asian girl was. She played Jane. But John is played by Donald Glover. And I used to hear Corbin talk about Donald Glover. And I always thought he was talking about... I always thought Danny Glover for some reason. I was thinking Lethal Weapon.
I mean, very similar names.
And I'm like, that's his favorite actor right now. I was like, I mean, okay, but that's kind of weird. And then I watched this and I'm like, this makes way more sense.
You're like, oh, different guy. Similar names, like super close, but yeah, not quite there.
That was kind of funny.
That's so funny.
I do have this weekend. I plan on watching the Dan Schneider doc.
I finished it.
We'll talk about it on our next episode then. And then I plan on watching maybe either Damsel or Grizel. I hear good things about both of those.
I didn't finish it yet. There's like 4 episodes, I think. But the Jared from Subway documentary.
Oh my God, it's funny. We were talking about that at my birthday.
Was I there yet?
I think so, because you were like, was it you or was it?
I don't think I was there yet, because I don't remember talking about that.
It was either you or Lisa then, because I said something about Subway guy, and they're like, what? Like, Jared's a pedophile? And I'm like, yeah. I was like,
that wasn't me.
Okay, it must have been Lisa then. I was like, there's a whole big thing on it. And she's like, really? Yeah. Okay. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe we should do a story on it then.
I've watched 2 episodes of it so far, but I'm pretty sure there's 4.
And we'll have to make sure we tag her or send her the particular episode, because she was very confused at the table when we were talking about it.
Oh yeah, no, he's disgusting.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Needless to say.
So, okay, well, I guess Crystal just gave us a little bit of an Easter egg maybe, huh?
Ooh, maybe.
And then, was it Damsel or Grizel? You watched one of those?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought you said I recommend number 2. Oh, you said I have a recommendation to. Never mind. I got it. Yes, I just caught up.
Welcome.
Oh, thanks. I'm always late to the party. Like, seriously. Like,
hey, you make it there. That's all that matters.
Fuck. All right. Well, it's been a good night. I'll talk to you guys later. On that note,
I still have
a story to tell. Okay. So now that we had our laughter and jokes and fun, I'm about to bring it all down. Okay.
Bringing it down for us.
So this one, though, is actually a request from a creepy fan.
Woo-hoo. Yay.
We like requests. This is from Emily Hill from Fargo, North Dakota. Shout out, Emily. Thank you for the suggestion.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated. Keep them coming.
So this story is about the Drew Shoden. I really hope we're saying it right. It's not spelled the easiest. So Drew was what you would call a natural born sweetheart. And you don't get those very often these days. She was a straight A student. She worked 2 jobs. When she wasn't working, she found herself working at shelters, working for the less fortunate. She was just doing good deeds consistently. It is reported that she even went to a high school dance and she showed a gentleman who was in a wheelchair a very good night as she danced with him and made sure his evening was special. Drew Katrina Shoden. She was born September 26, 1981. She joined her father, Alan, and her mother, Linda. She had a big brother already waiting for her, and his name was Finn, and I love that so much. Such a strong name. He's just such a strong boy waiting to happen. And also, it reminds me of Frozen, but still.
I was going to say, that's what it made me think of.
So her brother was just about 2 when she was born, maybe a little bit younger, but they became best friends, best siblings. They were very close throughout life. Sven always looked after his baby sister. Drew went by two different nicknames, one of them being Glue, because she was so attached to her mama, which I know all about that. My baby girl is almost 16 years old, and I feel like her nickname could be Glue as well at times. I love it, but then sometimes I'm like, you might find me sitting in my closet floor drinking a glass of wine, just saying, please let me make it through the day where she can't find me. But then I'm like, okay, come on in. Can't stay mad forever. The other nickname was Princess because, well, like, you know, most little girls, she loved the color pink. She loved to wear pink dresses and sparkles and glitters. And for me, I get it. I was that little girl who liked pink and Barbie and strawberry shortcake. And, well, I liked rainbow bright too. I liked all the colors, but I get the pink. She always wanted to wear little pink dresses. That was her little niche. She had some little cute quirks as well. One of them was she liked butter. They would find her eating sticks of butter or tubs of butter just straight, which, oh, yeah, I know, right?
I would barf.
I don't think I have any weird quirks like that. Quirks? Why do I keep saying quirks? Quirks.
Quirks. That's your quirk. That's your quirk.
Oh, shit. The only quirk I had growing up was Kirk Cameron. I don't think I had anything weird like that. Like my daughter, she'll eat macaroni noodles before they're cooked, or she'll eat a spaghetti noodle raw. It drives me crazy. Like ramen. I'm like, stop eating uncooked noodles, you freaking little weirdo. Pot pies, she'll cook them like for 3 minutes. They're still partly frozen, but she's too lazy to wait, so she'll eat them partially cold.
Oh, gross.
I know. She's weird. I don't think I had anything super weird like that when I was younger.
I don't think I did either. Not that I can remember.
So just shortly after Drew turned 3, her parents decided that they were going to be divorced. However, it did not change the family dynamic. Drew's dad stayed in the picture, and he stayed a constant figure with her and her brother. He was in their lives very full time. Mom did end up getting remarried, but everything still stayed civil. They all co-parented together. It was even said that when it came to holidays, Drew's dad would come and stay with them at Drew's mom's house. So they could all spend the holidays together. It was a very Bruce Willis, Demi Moore situation, I feel. Which, honestly, I'm all for it. If you all can get along and you guys can, like, be a family, even when others are remarried or have different people in their lives, and you can do that for your kids, I think that is 100% amazing.
That's, like, the best situation for the kids.
When Drew was about 10 years old, her mom and stepdad decided they were going to move out of St. Paul, Minneapolis, which is right there by the Twin City. And they were going to go to a little more remote, small town field area in Pequot, I think it's called. So Pequot Lake, there's a city in Crow Wing County, Minnesota. I looked it up, and it's a very quaint little country town type area. I don't know what to compare it to in Michigan, but like it's just kind of like a Port Huron or something. Like you're in it, and then you're probably gone.
Cute little town.
But luckily, in Drew fashion, she still excelled. She made friends. She was still pretty popular. She didn't have any problems relocating. She had a good childhood. Things are still enjoyable, and she's still loving life. Later in life, she became homecoming queen. Like I said, the popularity. She ended up going to college. She went to the University of North Dakota. She was a very busy gal. Like I said, not only was she going to college, she was a sorority sister. She was always doing sorority things. She had more than one job. She had a boyfriend. And she did get some downtime. But when she had her downtime, she ended up volunteering at a shelter for the less fortunate people. She did that with her sorority sisters. And I can't say it enough. Like, she was just a well-rounded human being. Like, people would say if she had something to give people, she would stop and give it to them. If she could help make somebody's day better, she would go out of her way to help them have a good day. Man, I wish kids were like that still in high school today.
Right. Not a lot of them are.
So one of Drew's jobs was working for Victoria's Secrets, and it was part-time. It was in the Columbia Mall, which was in Grand Forks, North Dakota, which was just a few miles away from the college. So now it's November 22nd, 2003. She's finishing her shift at Victoria's Secret, and she decided that she's going to go and do a little bit of shopping before she goes home. So she stopped at Macy's, did her thing, and she might have stopped and ran some other errands. She had some friends that worked at other stores around the mall. So, you know, kind of do like a wave as you, you know, go by. At this point, she decides that she is going to head home. So like every other girl, she's on her cell phone, chit-chatting with her boyfriend, talking, conversating, just normal conversation that couples do. And the next thing, Chris Lane, her boyfriend, hears, "Okay, okay." And then the phone went silent. It's 5 p.m. at this point. So not only does it suck because he's worried, like, what just happened? I mean, you hear someone be like, "Okay, okay," and then nothing. He's trying to not be, like, overly, like, panicked about it. But he lives like 200 miles away. So that's not even close. So if there was an emergency, he can't get to her that quick. But again, he's hoping like, okay, did she drop her phone? Did she drop her keys? Did she spill her coffee? Like just something silly that could have happened. Like, but when she didn't call back right away, he gave her a few minutes, but then like 10 minutes gone by and he still didn't hear from her. So he decided to call her mom, and her mom also lives back in her hometown. So again, 200 miles away, it's not easy for her mom to get there either. So mom hears what Chris had to say. Now she's a little concerned. So she calls her dad. Now her dad, he's like back in St. Paul. So that's like more like 500 miles away. So it's getting like farther and farther back. But he decided he wasn't going to wait. He jumped in his car and he drove it. He's like, baby girl, daddy's on his way. And he drove all day and he made it that night.
Oh, what a good dad.
I know, right?
Man.
He pulls into the mall parking lot. He finds her car where it's parked. Not exactly sure how they knew 100%, but apparently it was not a normal spot where she would normally park. I'm guessing it had to do with probably where she worked. She probably would have parked close to where she worked, and maybe it wasn't quite there.
Right.
So he sat there and he sat there all night and he waited and he waited and he waited and just waited, hoping that she was going to walk back to her car. It's now 7:44 p.m. that evening, and Chris gets another phone call from Drew's phone, but there's no voice. It's just kind of like static, maybe some muffling around. You hear like the touchpad being touched on the phone, and then it goes dead. He told the cops about it. The cops eventually traced it, and later it came back that it was off of a tower in Fisher, Minnesota. And it's at this time where it's getting late. Drew still hasn't come home. She's now supposed to be at her night job, which is at a nightclub. And she didn't show up, which is also very concerning because, like it's been said, she's very responsible. She's very punctual and she's very professional. And if she says she's going to be somewhere, she's going to be there. And the fact that she didn't show up for this job, now panic is starting to set in. Now, unfortunately, what Drew probably didn't realize or know that in the same mall as her, heading her way, watching her throughout the day, keeping tabs on her, was a sick sexual predator, a monster, if you will, named Alfonso Rodriguez. Now, Rodriguez is from Crookston, Minnesota. He came from a strong, hardworking family. However, Rodriguez, or Alfonso, I should say, I don't think he quite got the same family gene as his family. He was an introvert. He was shy, quiet, kept himself, didn't have a ton of friends. He dropped out of high school at 14. So he didn't have the social skills, especially the ones that you get from being around peers and being in high school. He kind of missed out on all that. He did get a job working at a sugar plant, but again, I don't think he was very ever socially equipped for society. On top of not having a high school education or any social cues, he's now into drugs. He started that at an early age. And yeah, he smoked your typical pot or marijuana, but he went into a little bigger things like LSD and hashish, which I looked that up and it just seems like it's like another like psychedelic type or I don't know, a form of cannabis.
Okay.
So now we get into his dark side a little bit. And that comes out at an early age as well. So for example, and mind you, most of his violence is aimed towards women. It's 1974, Crookston. And there's a movie in a movie theater parking lot. He spots a woman sitting in her car. He's carrying a steak knife. He goes over to the car. He orders her to drive and he takes her to a secluded area and he rapes her. But that's not even the crazy part. The crazy part is, while that is happening, he's out on a $1,500 bond because he got arrested and charged for a rape just a month prior. So while he is on bond for raping somebody else that he just got arrested for, while he's waiting for the conviction or trial or whatever you have to go to for his rape, he's in a parking lot raping somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, first off, probably shouldn't even be out on bail. Second of all, like, you're just fucked up and you're sick and you have problems.
Clearly, he has a big problem. Like, where he can't control himself.
Girl. We're going. We're getting there.
Gosh.
We're boot scooting and buggying right up to it, okay?
Man.
So, fortunately, in 1975, he did get convicted 15 years for both of those rapes. However, the judge that sent him said that he feels like he is a high security risk, and that's why he was sentencing him basically to the fullest and giving him the sentence that he did give him. He did not feel like he should be out with society. Rightfully so, right? Yeah. But unfortunately, instead of going to prison, he sent them to a medical treatment hospital or facility to where he would get a psych evaluation, he would get mental health help, and basically it was like a sex offender treatment program. Now, the part that got me in my feels and got me very angry, because he went to this program for 4 years, and then he was done. He didn't have to finish out his prison term. He didn't go to prison or jail. they're just like, oh, okay, he finished out his 4-year class, and so I guess that's good enough. He's doing better, and we're just gonna let him go.
That's ridiculous.
So now you got these two victims, and you don't know damn well, like, they're thinking, like, you did 4 years in a little hospital. You weren't even, like, probably scared or terrorized by other people or, you know, suffering. He was probably more in a nice private room trying to get help, but I don't feel like he got the strong punishment that he should. And these girls are probably like, ain't no way he healed. And is he gonna come back for us, you know?
Oh, they're probably terrified. I would be.
Oh, for sure. Like, I feel like the system failed in this case. Like,
so deeply failed.
Because, I mean, if you break it down, okay, give him 15 years. He didn't murder anybody, yada, yada, whatever. Okay. But he did rape two people, and that's very violent. And that ruined these women, like, ruined their lives for the rest of their lives. Probably put a lot of kinks in relationships with men in the future. And this guy gets 4 years of, you know, a cozy little place in prison. No, like, how about give him 15 years and have him do the sex offender class in prison as a side thing he has to do while he's in prison?
100%. Yeah, it shouldn't have been one or the other, especially the one that he got. Shouldn't have been that.
And there's a file that was written up about Rodriguez from a psychiatrist, from doctors, and it said, while in the facility, I feel like Rodriguez can control his urges. He can control the way of thinking. But however, once back in society, once back in the free world, they both said they feel very strongly he will not be able to control these urges, and he is high risk to be an offender again.
What? Yeah, so let's just let him go.
Yeah, so basically stating, like, once you let this dude out, he's going to be doing it. He'll be back. He'll be back. And, I mean, he did it once while he was on bail for the other one. So if he did it within 30 days of each other, like, okay, okay.
Gosh.
So after being let out a very short time, he confronts another woman getting into her car with a knife, takes her to a secluded area, and he rapes her. He is arrested. He goes to trial. Actually, he goes twice. First time was a hung jury. Second time, he got acquitted. I know. Crystal's face is saying it all.
I'm speechless.
Yeah. Like
the whole system, I could go on a rant, and I won't do that to you guys, but I could just go on a rant with how effed up the system is when it comes to rapists. But that's for another day and another rant.
So now, if you notice, he's got a pattern. The knife, women getting into their cars, taking them to secluded places. Like, it's the same pattern, same personality, same everything. So even though he's acquitted, they ended up sending him back to the mental hospital to get more treatment through the program. He wasn't there very long before they released him again. You know, maybe there's a flaw in this program. I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
Yeah. Big thought there, but I think I'm on the same page as you.
A couple days after he's released, and I can't make this shit up, people, he goes up to a woman, grabs her by the arm. He's got a knife. He tells her to get in the car and he will kill her. This bitch was like, no, bitch. You picked the wrong bitch, sir. She fought back. She refused to get in the car. He did stab her in the arm and he stabbed her in the stomach. However, she was strong enough to run away. So she did. And she survived and she was able to describe who he was.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I hope he's not getting certificates every time he completes his class because they're not working.
No, he is not a star student, okay? Just because you attend a class more than most people do doesn't make you the star student. Probably makes you the worst student because you're not picking up on the lesson.
You don't think he's getting, like, little trophies and stuff? Like,
gosh, with how he's acting, you think he would be. He's like, how many trophies can I get?
So, this time, he actually goes to prison. He gets sentenced for aggravated assault and attempted kidnapping, and he gets 13 years, and it's prison. Ding, 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 he's getting an orange party, okay? So, now it's 2003, 13 years later, and it's just a couple of months before he's a run-in with Drew. So after interrogating Alfonso, he initially said that when he ran into Drew, she reminded him of a teenage girl that molested him when he was younger, and he panicked, and he ran the opposite way. But then he happened to run into her again and decided, okay, no, he's going to go after her. And he changed his mind. So this is about the time where it's 5 o'clock and he decides he's going to follow her. He hears her talking on the phone to her boyfriend, following her to the parking lot, follows her to her car, pulls out the knife and orders her to go with him. All in the next couple hours, he will rape her, he will kill her, and he will dump her body.
Dang, he elevated his freaking routine then after the 13 years in prison. Like, he's like, oh no, I just did 13 years. How can I up my freaking, like, plot to hurt these people? It's insane.
Well, the last one he attacked ended up being, like, super strong, bitch. So he's like, man, I can't let that happen. Or gosh. I don't know. I don't know exactly what his thought process. Maybe over time he got more angry. I don't know.
And I gotta assume, since he said that she looked like a girl that had molested him when he was younger, probably just, like, heightened his anger in his mind if he was already angry towards women in general.
Maybe. If that was true, I don't know.
Right, yeah, who knows.
But I guess if he has this much violence towards women, maybe it was true.
Yeah.
Obviously, he hates them. I don't know.
Yeah, but he definitely has an issue.
Mm-hmm, I hate him a lot. I don't like him at all.
No, he needs to be in prison for life.
So this ended up being a big media case. It was plastered all over everybody's TV. Everybody said that she was the neighborhood girl, the girl next door, basically America's sweetheart that went missing. So people are coming together quickly. The police, the neighborhood, friends, family, everybody's scouting the neighborhood, looking. It didn't take long for people to, like, move the story along. It was moving pretty fast. Her friends and family thought, like, maybe not so much foul play. Maybe she's still alive. Like, they really thought that maybe she was stranded somewhere, left on the side of the road, basically just patiently waiting for somebody to find her and somebody to help her. The search went on for probably about 5 months, but only a week into it, they snatched up Alfonso. I mean, I think the signs were kind of aligning. The evidence was just way too close. So, like, okay, Rodriguez. So they go get him, and they're talking to him, and they're interrogating him. But he's not saying anything. He's just, like, being cold and quiet. They did charge him with kidnapping. And they're like, look, on paper, this says you all over. Like, you're very sus right now. And they questioned him. And, like, we know your MO, dude. And eventually he was like, yes, I was at the mall. But I was at the movie theater. I was watching Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which is a very good movie with Antonio Banderas. However, that's not my point. That movie, it wasn't even playing at that theater. Like, okay.
Dang, he didn't even care about his lie.
I was like, my dude, if you're going to lie and you're going to say you're at the movies, do some freaking research and at least pick a movie that's there. It's not that hard. At this point, you're just 100% lazy and you're just now even a bigger idiot. But
he just doesn't even care.
Furthermore, you're more than an idiot. You're just a monster. You're a high school dropout, 14-year-old drug addicted, rapist, sexual predator, all the things. And you need to just go away forever and ever and ever. Okay?
Yep. He's just evil.
But by this time, evidence, little by little, it's starting to come in. And he can't really fight the evidence, like solid facts. Like, as Crystal would say, facts on facts on facts. Okay? And they're all there. And they found surveillance cameras at nearby stores, and he was on them. They found receipts from shopping excursions that he had did. One of them was buying a knife. And, you know, stupidity leak number two is that he bought a knife and then he's going to go ahead and use the knife like right around the same area that he bought the knife from. Like, fucking
stupid. It's like the fact that he just doesn't care so much that he's just like, no, like he's just so ruthless that he doesn't even have any shame in it. He's just like, no, I wanted to go do that. So that's what I did.
I'm banking on that. I'm really hoping he's not that much of an idiot, but...
Yeah, who knows?
They found a bloody shoe. And they found a bloody knife. They did a DNA swab, and they found out, like, 100%, dude, it's a match for Drew. So the search is still going strong. Drew's mom... She was out with the volunteers. She was actually making sandwiches, passing them out, making sure that everybody was being taken care of. Linda gets a call that says, can you please come to the command center, which was set up behind the high school in Crookston High. And she's like, okay. And you know, walking or driving or wherever she, how she got there, the nerves, like your stomach, it has to be like, I'm either going to get the news she's safe and we found her, or she's dead. And me thinking, if they're saying, can you come here? I'm going to go with door number three. I'm going to think like, okay, like, or door number two, like she's dead, because if they found her, it probably would have been like, holy shit, they found her, get over here. You know what I mean? It would have been.
Yeah. Like they would have said that.
Yeah. That's just my
thing. Yeah, I agree.
So upon arrival, she gets the worst news of her entire life, that Drew's body was found in a ravine. It's now April 17th, 2004, and from here on out, that will be the worst day of her mother's life. So when they came across her body in the ravine, her hands were tied behind her back, and she was partly nude. Unfortunately, it took snow melting to uncover her body, and that's why it took so long to find her. Forensics had reported that she had been beaten, she had been stabbed, and she had been sexually assaulted. She had a 5.5-inch cut along her neck. They also found rope around her neck, and they also found a plastic bag tied to her. Forensics are having a hard time pinpointing what exactly killed her. It could have been the strangulation, could have been rope, could have been suffocation, could have been the cut, it could have been the beat. Like, so many things happened to her, they don't know what actually did her in. Or it could have been just even the exposure from being out in the cold. But at the end of the day, no matter what option it is, all of them is because of Alfonso. All of them is because if he wasn't there, if it wasn't for him, she would not have been in that situation, and this would not have been her outcome. So real quick, because we've talked about a lot of different cities, Grand Forks and the University of Dakota, which that's where she was going to school. It's right there by Grand Forks. And then it's also very close to the border of Minnesota, which is very close to Crookstown, which is in Minnesota. So they're about 25 miles, give or take, from each other. And then Crookstown is where her, or Crookston is where her body was found. But also right there in that little area of cities was Fargo, North Dakota. And it's like, here's Fargo. If you fall this way, you're in North Dakota. But if you fall this way, you're in Minnesota. So that's like how thin the line is between those two cities.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So they're getting a lot of cards, flowers, love, care, support. The community is definitely stepping it up for this family. Linda says she, you know, can only express right now the gratitude she's holding from the community. She said that she can't express how sad she is, the grief that she's going through, the devastation of knowing she's never going to get her daughter back, but the uplifting from the community. They're the ones that are carrying her, and they carried her through it. Drew had hundreds of people show up at her funeral. Like, she was just, again, loved by so many, and so many showed up to show her some amazing love. During the trial and after the trial and before the trial, Afonso would not admit to having anything to do with Drew. But going to the trial, the evidence was very overwhelming and very compelling. Like, the prosecutors had enough evidence to clearly convict him. But again, he was not talking or doing anything to help the case. Afonso was charged with kidnap and murder of Drew. In 2006, he was convicted. A month later, he was sentenced to death. He showed no remorse. He showed no guilt. The judge gave him an opportunity to speak. He chose not to. Now, this is the funny thing. It's been over 100 years, like a full century, since anyone in North Dakota had been sentenced to death, or in Minnesota. Neither one of them are death penalty states. The juror said that it was a very hard trial. They cried. It was very emotional, but was it fitting? I mean, I'm always on the fence with death penalty. Like, I feel like in this case, it's very deserving. But the other part of my brain is like, no, keep that motherfucker alive and let him sit in misery for the rest of his life and let him think of her face every day while he sleeps. Let her haunt him forever.
And like, I go back and forth with that too. But I feel like this guy was such a like sociopath. Yeah, sociopath piece of shit, where he literally didn't care or have any remorse or any type of feeling connected to it, that like, I feel like he just would sit in jail and not care and just would wait until the next opportunity that he could possibly hurt someone else. So then I'm like, well, maybe this was the best option, because it's not like, I don't know.
He's so cool. He's like a legit pure evil monster.
Pure evil, like no, not even a grain of remorse in his body.
So with neither of the states having death penalties, you're probably thinking like, how did he get the death penalty then? So because he took her body out of state, it became a federal thing, because he's transporting from state to state. So federal took over and they're like, die, bitch. Okay. Well, maybe not like that, but yeah, you know, they're probably thinking it. You know what I mean? Like,
man.
Afonso fought his conviction all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was denied. He tried the insanity plea. He laid out the details of the murder. He said that they said that he was very sane at the time of the murder. With details that he had specifically talked about, he chose how he chose her. And they said because she was on her phone, she had her keys in her hand, her car door was already open. So these are little things that make you think like, holy shit, like this is stuff that you do all the time. Like, how many times do you walk on mire talking on the phone with your key ready to like beep, beep your car?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Yeah.
In mine, I don't even beep it. I just have to touch the handle with my keypad and it opens. So I kind of like that because it's like quickly I can get in.
Yeah, it's like right away.
So he also talked about the murder and how he did it. He talks about how he put the plastic bag that we're all curious about. Like, why does he have a plastic bag? He put it over her head when she started to bleed to protect blood from getting in his car. He wrote a 416-page document of his appeal with a lot of details, gruesome details. Linda Walker, her mother, chose not to read it. She said she does not want to read it. She just wants to know that he will never see the light of day and says that, you know, he is pure evil. He is a monster. And people like him, they just want, he just wants the spotlight shined on him. At the end of the day, he said that she made it easy. She was distracted by having the keys in her hand, by talking on the phone, like creepies. My lovely, lovely creepies, women, young ladies, even men, okay? Be aware of your surroundings, okay? Pay attention, be vigilant, watch what you're doing, try to listen to what you're doing, keep your eyes and ears open because there are people of like Rodriguez out there. And I got a daughter who's about to turn 16 and she's going to be entering the world more and more without me or either one of her fathers, and that scares the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm. There are some scary people out there. Can't predict where they're going to be or when they're going to choose to, like, strike at somebody.
And because of him, small towns, especially, like, around there, people did change. They did watch. They did take note on what they were doing. They paid more attention. Alfonso shook the community and he shook a lot of people because he's a scary fucking dude. Okay. And, you know, it's like cases like these with the small communities, small countryside houses, small towns, people do leave their doors open. They leave their doors unlocked. They leave their windows open. When you have a little tight knit community and you feel safe, but then you get one little rat like him sneaking his way in. And you're just like, oh, nope, not no more. They do know that she was sexually assaulted. And when it comes to young teens, it gave everybody a fright. It gave them scared. People are like talking to their daughters and their kids and like, dude, it can happen to you. It happened to her. It can happen to me. It can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now, I mean, this was 2000s, early 2000s, but even now, like, I'm starting to see more and more women are taking self-defense classes. More and more women are getting licensed to carry. They're learning how to shoot. They're learning how to protect themselves. It's not just men that can protect themselves. A lot of women are too now. My daughter's mm-hmm. in a self-defense class, and I feel like more women need to feel to show like empowering. They need to show like, come at me, bitch. I dare you. And start scaring the shit out of these men and start taking these men out. So maybe men will be a little bit more scared to approach some of these women, any women.
Yep. Just hopefully just to like make them hesitate even just a little bit more.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, Drew's story is a very tragic story. It's hard to hear. It's hard to talk about. It's hard to listen to. But there was a little bit of light at the tunnel, at the end of the tunnel. And Drew changed some laws. When it comes to sex offenders, they're a lot tougher now. They're a lot stricter. There's more convictions and there are tougher convictions. And because of her, she kind of made that happen. Kind of like the Amber Alert. It sucks that it takes somebody losing a life to make that law happen.
Yeah, I hate that that has to be how things change for something like horrible and tragic to happen to somebody.
They also made it that once sex offenders leave prison, they have very strict supervision guidelines that they have to follow. Good. In 2006, President George W. Bush signed into a law, the Adam Walsh Child Protection Safety Act, and that inside that included Jew's Law, which among other things, they also changed the name to the National Sex Offender Registry, and it was Drew Schroden. Is that how we said her name?
Schroden, yeah.
National Sex Offender Public Website. And it's a great thing because if you're a mom and you want to look up in your state, in your country, where there's sex offenders, do they live by you? How close are they? Is this person an offender? You can go on this website and it'll tell you everything. So you can put your address in and it'll tell you all around your radius of where sex offenders live and how close they are to you.
Not me going to check this website when after we're done to be like, do I have anybody living around me?
Is ignorant bliss?
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't. I'll just be scared.
So, as an update from Fargo, North Dakota, it said Rodriguez's death sentence was overturned in September of 2021 by Erickson, who found that Rodriguez's constitutional rights were violated during a trial by misleading testimonies from the coroner. The failure of lawyers to outline the possibility of insanity defense and evidence of severe post-traumatic stress order. F you, Erickson.
Like, what? Rodriguez. Did you hear what this man did? Why are you helping him? I just... Oh,
money, money, money.
Yeah, literally.
Rodriguez was still listed with a death row inmate at Maximum Security Penitentiary in Indiana. A message was sent to the prison to find out if he had been moved and where he had might be held. In 2021, Garland announced a moratorium on federal executions after the Justice Department was criticized by the death penalty death penalty opponents for pursuing the sentence despite President Joe Biden's opposition to capital punishment. So, I mean, whatever, he's still put away for life. However, yeah. I mean, you must really want that paycheck if it's going to be worth your time to just overturn it. He's not getting out anyway, but.
Right. The thing that is kind of like makes me roll my eyes is like, oh, they're like, well, he didn't get a fair thing because they couldn't plead insanity or whatever. And it's like the dude has been to a mental hospital multiple times and they're like, okay, he's good. He's good to go. So like clearly they think that he's sane enough to let him out of these places. He's just a psychopath, like sociopath, like rapist. Like that's what it is.
Oh, for sure. And if they wouldn't have let him out the first, I don't know, couple of times, he might not have done it again because he did it multiple times. He never learned.
And, he didn't care.
And for this guy to be like, well, he didn't get a fair trial. Well, you know what? Drew didn't get a fair life.
Yep. It's just like she was still so young and she was just this sweet, caring person who went out of her way to like help people and help society. And it's just not fair.
I know. This is why I could never. This is why I could never be a defense lawyer.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't. Like, I mean, it's fine. There's a job for everybody, and like some people do need defense lawyers.
Yeah, the ones that are actually innocent, right? They do need defending. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I could do that, but I can't I could not defend this guy.
No, I literally couldn't. I would be like, I'm so sorry. Like, not for me. Like, I just couldn't even think about doing that. Oh, that's crazy. Such a sad story.
I know. But thank you, Emily Hill, again, for sending this recommendation. If anybody else has a recommendation, feel free to send it over and we will give it a go.
Yep. Send them over and we'll check them out. But yeah, definitely a good recommendation for a very sad story.
No, it's from Emily's hometown. So, and I know obviously by this time it's been, you know, 20 years, but hopefully your town has had some peace and healing and, you know, hopefully her memory lives on in a good, positive way in your cities.
Definitely.
So now that I took my glasses off, I'm blind. But, well, I know it was, again, a little longer tonight. We pray that the Quinn family can find peace for their two-year-old son and work it out together. Maybe just
think,
get that
think of your child.
Just go your separate ways. Just get your divorce and go your own ways. You both got money. Neither one of you are going to suffer. Just do what's best for your baby boy and move forward.
Yeah, amen. That's
maybe not
the best solution, I feel.
Literally.
Well, yeah, figuratively or literally, let's just no more throwing shit at each other.
So, well, I think I am going to go and do some things and then probably pass out for the night because I got one more work day in the morning. And yeah, sometimes it'd be like that. So
I feel you. Tomorrow's Friday for us. But
yes. TGIFF.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully you guys have a great day, whatever day of the week it is that you're listening to this. And thank you again for sticking around for another story.
Yes.
We appreciate you.
For sure. For sure. And we'll be back next week and maybe we'll have some more dumb diddy diddy dum to talk about.
More updates.
See who he's bringing down. Is he pulling Jay-Z and Bay down? Is she going down too?
Who's next? That's my question. Saga continues with Diddy.
The bounce is going to be nothing but Criss Cross and MC Hammer playing these days, y'all.
Right. For real.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, we got to go. Stay creepy. Shit.
Girl, go for it. You're good.
There's nothing left for Crystal to say.
I'll say peace out, y'all.
Peace
Stay
out.
Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.